Coming up on the Panel Scanners podcast, Johnny and Darren both look back fondly on a pair of 90s comics and retroactive reviews as Phil grown fond of the Doc Ock as Spidey storyline, and the crew offers what is and what isn't in Stuck, Stick, Pit, and Sayonara. It's the Panel Scanners Episode 9, and it's happening now.
Comic books. We're talking about comic books. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Panel Scanners.
And now we've lost all of our listeners.
I'm your host, Johnny Capps. With me, as always, is Darren.
Again, I may have made a huge mistake.
I think I made a huge mistake.
Yeah. And then...
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Panel Scanners.
Are we starting again? This is wonderful.
He just said that as his catch line, that's all.
What?
That's my catch line, Johnny.
Oh, yo.
You're confusing Johnny, man.
I'm sorry. All right,
so we're starting over?
No, good. This is good radio.
Awesome.
This is good podcasting. All right.
Way to somewhat fail, sir.
All right. So, facepalm.
Comic books. And I am the co-host, Phil.
We are talking about the greatest industry in America, comic books. All right, so this week we had a big problem. We had a big mix-up with the New York Times. And I'm going to defer to my friend Darren on this story.
New York Times kind of let the bean spill on Grant Morrison's tenure on Batman. Now, Grant Morrison is actually the one who created Damian Wayne, who is not long for the world, as we have come to find out, as they have planned to kill him off. In a storyline eerily reminiscent of my childhood when fans could call in to DC Comics and have Robin killed. Now, the important distinction there is that was actually the Jason Todd Robin, who was not really a very popular Robin to begin with, so he was easily kill-offable, I suppose you'd say. But overwhelmingly, they voted in favor to have Jason Todd killed off. On this time around, I think they just sort of pulled the trigger on it. And I do believe it's Grant Morrison who is...
That wouldn't surprise me.
Who has decided he wants to kill him off. So, it's his call, I suppose you'd say. But that was obviously not supposed to leak out. I'm pretty sure why it leaked out was on a podcast called Fat Man on Batman, which is hosted by Kevin Smith. And I think Grant Morrison kind of got a little bit into the spirit and let that slip. And I don't know if... But I have to give Kevin Smith credit. He actually edited that part of the podcast out. And... saved it because he's I'm very big on not spoiling anything, so I don't know. That's what we are to expecting in Batman Incorporated number 8, I believe. I haven't been reading Batman Incorporated.
Batman Incorporated number 8 came out today.
Oh, so did it happen then?
Or was this a red herring to get everybody to buy comics?
It happened.
Okay.
Did you read it?
I've not, but I've read enough reviews to know that. So
issue 8 is the one.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. Next.
Well, so long, Damian Wayne.
Wow.
We hardly knew.
Short-lived character. I don't really...
I mean, does that take away the power? Does
anyone
care?
Well, there's a lot of talk to him coming... It's comic books.
It's Lazarus back. Okay.
Yeah, Lazarus Pit. I mean, Jason Todd came back. Bruce Wayne came back. All right. The next headline we're talking about is WTF April with DC Comics.
Yeah.
DC Comics talked about having, in April, all of their comics were going to be deemed... WTF. They have recently dropped that because of the controversial connotations of the term WTF.
So,
but,
was it they're just going to kill all their titles?
No, it's the in each one of their titles, something mammoth is going to happen. Something gigantic and skull-breaking is going to happen.
Huh.
This is leading up to their big event, the Trinity War, which is happening this summer? I believe it's happening this summer, which the Trinity deals with the Trinity of Sin, who is Pandora, Judas Iscariot, and another character who remains unidentified at the moment, but he's, he remains unidentified at the moment. Not much is known about this. Also, the Trinity of Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman.
I think I've seen solicits for that.
Yeah, it's been solicited all over the place. Also, the Trinity of Justice League teams, which Justice League of America, and Justice League Dark. but not a whole lot is known about this. This happens in April, which is WTF April. Also, what happened last week was Hellblazer ended with issue 300, which was one of the last high number comic series. What do you guys think about it? Is this the end of the high numbers in the comics?
That's the trend, isn't it?
It seems to be the trend.
I mean, it's alienated a lot of fans, myself included.
Yeah, I mean, you failed with the New 52 and a lot of things that seemed like a good jumping off point. It was the same with Marvel doing the Marvel Now. A lot of people were like, well, it seems like the best time to get away. And it's also that whole, like, looking up comics in general. You have to figure out which volume each thing is. And I think it's one of those things that the companies feel it's a good thing, but a lot of us old school people don't. But if you remember, I want to say it was in the 90s they did this too, and then they picked the issues back up at the higher
the
issue
Heroes
number.
Reborn, yes. And with, Zero
So I don't know if this is just them testing it again and seeing if that it's if it works better now, or if they're going to ultimately do the same concept.
But it seems like they're dug in on this, though.
What they did with the Hellblazer, with the ending at 300, they are starting next month a Constantine solo series with him integrated into the New 52. Which he's already been a character with the Eye Vampire and the Justice League Dark. He's already been ingrained in the world. So they're just starting it over with the Constantine number one, which is by Ray Fox and Jeff Lemire. I don't remember who the artist is.
Is the only thing still counting up Spawn, then?
Spawn, Fables is at 126.
Because Spawn is pushing 3, isn't it?
Spawn is pushing pretty high numbers.
I thought I saw a 290-something, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
Spawn, Fables is 126. Spawn is still pretty high. Walking Dead is now at 107. So there are some... I mean, but that's nothing compared to the 900 that was with Action
Superman,
Comics.
Superman, yeah.
And there's still Journey and Destiny, too, that Marvel's doing, that I think they're still in the really high digits as well, like 6-something, right?
Who among us, even if you're not a super fan, didn't want to have Superman 1 or Action Comics 1000 on your shelf?
I would have bought it.
I mean, I would have bought it and framed it. That's just like the coolest thing ever. Now, I know they've come out and said that they're going to do something special for what they will count as the 1000th issue. But it's not the same. It really isn't. And I know it's just a little imprint on a cover, but still.
It's the ambiance of having a 1000th comic.
Yeah. I mean, it would be cool just to have like 98, 998, 999, all. And they would always build, I remember Superman 500. Not Action Comics, but the build up, or the Batman 500, excuse me. The build up to that was just like, you knew, like they built up to some major catastrophic event, which was the, I believe, if I remember correctly, it's on my list of possible eventual, retro reviews, which would be the Superman, Death of Superman, and the Nightfall sagas are on my list, along with Long Halloween and those sorts of things I can't look to read. But I do, if I recall, it was the Jean-Paul Valley's assuming the mantle of the Bat from Azrael, and they built up to that with the whole Nightfall thing. And it was all meant for that. So I was really looking forward to... Within about 3 years from now, you'd start getting close. They probably would have started building the Action Comics 1000, and it would have been this mega event.
Well, see, here's the thing. Like, comic number 678 doesn't sell as well as comic number 1.
Or 1000, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course not.
Comic number 1 is still a sacred gem.
Now, have we devalued number ones now since they're everywhere?
Yes.
Especially now with the Marvel Now initiative, where almost every week you go to a comic shop and you can pick up a number one or a point one, starting off a new series or a rehash of a series. But where you guys were talking about the high numbers, I think that isn't necessarily true for everyone, because being like an X-Men fan, they never really got super high with the numbers because they kept restarting. They kept giving new issues.
Yeah.
They changed the teams. So for me, being a Marvel X-Men guy, like, I never really saw high numbers other than with my Amazing Spider-Man. And like I said before, even Amazing Spider-Man in the 90s took that bump where it went back down, and then they rehashed like Spider-Man Volume 2, and then it went back to
just forget the 90s completely.
Don't you think, though?
There were some good things in the 90s.
I thought Marvel's, I guess you'd call it their marketing strategy back in the late 90s, early 2000s with the Marvel Ultimates, where they did just restart everything. It was fantastic because it was really cool for a fan like myself who would casually dip in and out of X-Men and casually dip in and out of Spider-Man to go back and just – I remember the Ultimate Spider-Man, like the first 25 issues was just – what was that? BMD?
Yeah.
Brian Michael Bendis?
He still writes Ultimate Spider-Man to this day.
I mean, it was just –
The Ultimates movement was a very good
but I think the reason that Ultimates worked so well, just the Ultimate Universe, was because it was a new universe. And
that's what I'm saying. It was separate from the original continuity.
Well, and I mean, I think that was the problem with the New 52 for you guys, is like they threw this at you and they're saying, we kind of changed things, but there are still some things that work from the old universe. And I think that hurt versus Marvel's world where these new number ones weren't new number ones. They're continuations after a large event.
You know what the biggest problem I had with the New 52? It was that everyone starts over from number one. This is original. This is Origins. We're going to start fresh. And then people got really mad, and they kind of got cold feet, like, well, we're not going to do it with Batman, you know, because Nightwing says, like, so there's not going to be any Nightwing? It was almost like when people went, so wait, no Nightwing? No Connor Hawk? No Kyle Rayner? None of these characters? They're all gone? And DC, it was almost like... And I don't want to say this because I was a DC fan. I really love what Dan DiDio's done over the past 10 years. It was like, did we forget about these characters? Okay, so maybe we won't do a total restart. Yeah. I just feel like, as a longtime DC devotee and growing up reading their comics, you really alienated a lot of the people that had stuck with, because it's always been a thrill for me up until a year and a half ago to read a Batman issue that's referencing something that I read when I was 12.
Yeah.
Because you can't get that in any other entertainment medium. Not to the extent where you could, oh my gosh, I remember that. You pull out the little drawer, you rifle through, you flip. That's it. That's the issue right there.
Marvel still references. Yeah. I'm just saying. Yeah.
Well, it's...
I don't know. I think it's kind of to each their own. I think we can all agree that for the most part, the high numbers are gone, and issues number one are losing their power.
I will agree with that. I will agree with that to a certain extent.
And can we make a distinction there? We're not talking about necessarily losing value. We're talking about it's not as special.
You're right.
And like, I remember going into a comic shop as a kid, and you saw issue number one of some superhero you may not have heard of. Like, I have to try this. You know, it's not because it may be worth $10,000 in 20 years. And
it's because I want to know.
It's because this is this is a really great, as true comic fans, we were more the aficionados saying, what if this becomes like the next great thing? I want to be in on the ground floor. I want to discover something new.
I still have a friend who brags about having Morpheus number one. And, I mean, nobody really knows who Morpheus is.
Really?
So, that's exactly right, because you want the thrill of having the number one and seeing the character start.
Yeah.
All right, so our last headline is with the Marvel Comics.
Age of Ultron.
Got Age of Ultron, and I'm going to go to our Marvel hero.
Wow. Phil. I'm excited for this. I am. It's kind of a blow because I just got excited that I was finally done with AVX, and they're still petering out with the A+X thing. There's a couple more issues for there. I think they said there was going to be 6 total, so there's 2 more. But now I'm getting hit with this other big thing, Age of Ultron, and they're doing it a little bit differently than they did with AVX, where AVX was kind of all-encompassing thing, where if you bought X-Men, if you bought Avengers, they were tied in. My understanding, I'm fairly certain about this, my understanding is that the comics that are intertwined, Fantastic Four, Superior Spider-Man, Avengers Assemble, Wolverine and the X-Men, they're getting special AU issues that are going to tie in to the Age of Ultron story arc, which, by the way, starts next week, which would be March 7th, is that right? I can't remember what Wednesday is.
Let me check.
Regardless, starting the first week of March with Age of Ultron number one. And
6th.
Is it the 6th? Okay, Age of Ultron number one. Also in March, we're going to get number 2, Fantastic Four 5 AU, Age of Ultron 3, and Superior Spider-Man 6 AU. So we're going to get some Otto Octavius Spider-Man action against Ultron, which I... Honestly, one of the main reasons I'm reading this bad boy is because I saw some picture solicitations of him fighting with his spider octobot things, and it looks awesome.
We were having a discussion of the debate on the strength of Superior Spider-Man.
My understanding is, one, it's not going to last too much longer.
Okay.
And two, it's well written, but I'll get to that when we get to...
Stuck Stick Pick.
That one.
All right. And speaking of which...
Actually, Retro first, correct?
Retro? I got the Retro Review this week.
There are two, Johnny.
We have two Retro Reviews this week.
And the reason that this is happening,
yeah,
and because...
of the episode that we lost.
Yeah, we had the hiatus due to some technical difficulties on our end. Our software decided to lose our podcast from last month. So we're kind of double downing this month on our Retro Reviews. And we're going to start with Johnny.
That's right. I get to review The Max, which was a series by Sam Keith in the 90s by Image. It was about a guy who existed in two worlds. In one world, he was kind of a homeless man. He was kind of a loser. Nobody really liked him all that much. Nobody really even knew who he was. And in the other world, he was a superhero. For some reason, I related to this comic very strongly. These guys know why. So, it was great. The Max, really, if you look at Sam Keith's work, The Max was definitely top-notch. And you guys watched, it was shortly an MTV television cartoon.
I remember
that.
Did
you guys watch it?
I did.
Okay. Am I giving it fair?
I heard it was a very faithful adaptation of the comic.
Right.
It was versus, like, Aeon Flux that was going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. I really have never read any comic that was like it. The artwork was fantastic. The storyline was great. The characters were strong. And he didn't talk down to his audience. He really... There were some psychological inferences there that I really enjoyed. Like him going into the animus, which is a psychological thing from Carl Jung. And I really enjoyed that. But yeah, The Max was great. It was a great 90s series. And this is why the 90s cannot be deleted from comics.
That's true. There's one or two gems in there.
There were instances of awesomeness. And for our second Retro Review, I'm transferring to my friend Darren.
Well, 21 years before Disney bought Lucasfilm and announced that they were going to make episodes 7, 8, and 9, Lucasfilm commissioned author Timothy Zahn to do just that. Not necessarily make the films, but write novels 7, 8, and 9. It's often called the Heir to the Empire trilogy or the Thrawn trilogy after the main protagonist from the Heir to the Empire trilogy, Grand Admiral Thrawn, who takes over the lead villain role from Darth Vader and the Emperor. I read all three novels because they began as the novels The Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and The Last Command. And in the late 90s, Dark Horse put out the comic book adaptations, which I have to say, it's hard for me to recall what I felt about the novels, because in 1991, Star Wars had been gone for 8 years. And now, consider yourself an adolescent. 8 years back then is an eternity. 8 years now to us is like 2003 or something like, or 2005. And that's just, that's like, I feel like Batman Begins was 2005. It still feels like this really new thing to me, and the series has ended. But back then, 8 years to an adolescent who loves Star Wars is an eternity. I remember clearly being in high school, and I saw a kid reading this book, and it had the Star Wars characters in a cover, and I was like, what is that? It's like, oh, it's a new novel. It's about the new Star Wars. I'm like, oh my God, I have to own this. So I remember just being unbelievably thrilled to actually be able to read adventures with Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and Lando Calrissian and Chewbacca and Princess Leia and all these people. And I read all three novels. They came out, I think, 2 or 3 years apart for each of them. I think the whole series wrapped up around 1995. And then in 1996, they began with the Heir to the Empire trilogy. And in this, I want to show you guys the artwork. And if you get an opportunity for Heir to the Empire, I'm unfamiliar with the artist here. But I thought the artwork in here was just very unique, and I loved it. The pencils and inks were by a team... Olivier Vatine and Fred Blanchard. Just go ahead and take a look at some of the artwork. The space scenes in this are peerless. to anything I've seen before. Now, the story itself continues the story, as I said, of Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. A story that, if you really look, I mean, doesn't that just look gorgeous? A story.
I'm not a big fan of the characters of his people, honestly.
You're not. I am in awe of this artwork.
No, I'm liking the spaceship. I'm liking the spaceship a lot.
I don't know. I just keep looking. I just think the artwork in here is some of the best. It's one of the best laid out, and one of the best inked, and one of the best penciled books, in my humble opinion, that I have ever seen. Great. And in these particular books, since they're adaptations of novels that go six issues, you're not going to get a lot of splash pages. You're not going to get a lot of you're going to get a lot of dialogue and a lot of panels, which I particularly like. The plot itself, as I said, continues the story of Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, which is a difficult sell, because if you look at the end of Return of the Jedi, their story is over. That story has ended. It does do a lot of good things because it puts you right back in the universe that at that time no longer existed. You do get to play around in that universe. And again, this is pre-special edition Star Wars, pre-Star Wars prequels, before any of that had occurred. Okay, so this was nice. This was the only Star Wars there was when it came out. Now, when this came out, these particular graphic novels, this actually does predate the special editions, too. And I just ate it up. Although, I was concerned going back and rereading this because I had such fond memories. And this is the chief villain right here, Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Skinny Colossus?
sort of. I mean, I get why you're saying that.
Yeah, the face looks a lot like...
The plot itself is very political, and it does a lot with the Old Republic and their ability, or lack thereof, to continue to hold the peace in the galaxy while Grand Admiral Thrawn continues to rebuild the Empire, and he continues to marshal forces to once again hopefully overthrow the New Republic.
Very cool.
They discover a dark Jedi, or what they assume is a dark Jedi, named Joris Kaboth, who then starts working with the Grand Admiral to draw Luke and Leia and Leia's twins with Han Solo in to become a dark Jedi with him. An interesting note, the author Timothy Zahn, who's a pretty famous science fiction author, he intended Joris Kaboth to be a clone of Obi-Wan Kenobi, but Lucasfilm would not let him do it because they didn't want to sully. They didn't want to sully the memory of Obi-Wan Kenobi. It turns out they had plans to do that all on their own in the prequel trilogy. I have to say, hindsight now, looking at this, it's a difficult sell. It's a different tone from the original trilogy. I think one of the things that people miss from the prequel trilogy is it never felt to me like Star Wars. Sure, there were lightsabers. No. Sure, there was the Force, but it never really felt like Star Wars. In a way, this, you could say, doesn't, but at the same time, you could see why it's a natural progression, because we did a lot of spirituality, we did a lot of relationships in the first trilogy. The next logical step would be they now have to be very political because they're trying to form a new republic, and so there's a lot of cloak and dagger stuff, there's a lot of spy stuff going on. It is fun, though, to watch and read. It was fun to read, and it was fun to watch. Like, Luke Skywalker's a full Jedi now.
Very nice.
And he's el hombre, as you would say. Like, he's very, very, he never gets mad. He's in control of every situation. And that was one of the great things about the original trilogy that you didn't see with the prequel trilogy, is you meet Luke Skywalker as the farm boy. And then he's this farm boy slash budding warrior in Empire Strikes Back who's got a lot to learn. And by the way, you see him in Return of the Jedi, he's almost there. He's like, one last test do you have? You must face Vader. But by this time, he's the man. And it was a lot of fun to watch him go out. So I love the art in the original Heir to the Empire trilogy. And one of my, I remember looking so forward. Very few times had I ever looked so forward to a comic book series after having read the novel for Heir to the Empire and enjoying it, and then having the adaptations be very, very, very cool. Then when I came out, I'm like, I can't wait because the artwork was so good. And then the second six books come out, and it was not by the same team. And I was like, oh, no. But the artist in the second one's Terry Dodson. And you know Terry Dodson very well. His artwork is good, and I finished up that. And in the second six, the second book is Dark Force Rising, where things start unraveling a bit for the New Republic. Joris Kaboth, the Dark Jedi, begins to grow in power, and things get a little dicey for our friends Luke Skywalker. And then The Last Command, once again done by another artistic team, but again, the artwork was very good. I'd say these, if you're a Star Wars fan, and you were alienated by the prequels, like I think a lot of us were,
yeah.
You could do a lot worse than picking up the Thrawn trilogy, or Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and Last Command comic book adaptations. I'll say that the books themselves, I enjoyed them. I don't know if I'll ever revisit reading them. Because to me, reading a novel, I have not a lot of novels I want to read, and that's an investment in time, because it takes a good long while. But they were a lot of fun to read. I'm in that Star Wars kick now, where I'm starting to get back into it, and this kind of helped, because I remember that thirst I had when that book came out, like, oh my god, what is this, as I mentioned before.
I just realized why I actually recognized that storyline from Heir to the Empire. I read the novelization of it.
Yes. It's been a long time.
Yeah, I actually read the book, not the graphic novel.
Yeah.
This is actually a redemption for you, because you were a huge Star Wars devotee until the prequels, were you not?
Yeah, but first 10 minutes of episode 2, I checked out.
Right.
And I never checked back in.
And I remember us talking about how you were ready to abandon the entire franchise.
I did abandon the franchise for a good 10 years.
Right.
Well, this is 2013, right?
Yeah.
And episode 2 is what, 2002?
That sounds right.
It's about right where I just is like, the second I saw Anakin start speaking and you realize he was a whiny little bitch, and that just changed Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't watch. I couldn't look Darth Vader. I'm like, you used to be the baddest man ever, and now I look at you as a whiny emo teenager.
I feel like a lot of people had that reaction.
Yeah,
I certainly did.
I did too. But I know a lot of people who eventually went back, and I just couldn't do it. And it was funny that I had, if you guys recall, one of our early episodes, I had said, you know, I think I want to try to get back into Star Wars. And then 2 days after the episode, they made the big announcement that there's going to be more movies.
Yeah,
and you know, I had to say, as much as I'm like, oh, no, but then it was like, it's going to be 7, 8, 9, and Luke Skywalker is going to be a focal point. I'm like, oh, my gosh, can we please do this? So I think that I've gotten too into Last Command, because it's 18 comics. I'm going to finish it, because I've enjoyed it. It's been really great to dip back into Star Wars.
I'm gonna say that it would probably be hard-pressed to find a Star Wars fan who's not going to say that the early Dark Horse Star Wars comics were top-notch.
Yes, if you remember, one of my other retro reviews was Dark Empire by Cam Kennedy, and forgive me off the top of my head, I don't remember who wrote it. But I enjoyed that, too, and that dealt with Luke falling over the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a different tone here, where Luke is tempted to the dark side, doesn't even bat an eyelash, he doesn't even come close. He's like, no, I'm going to take you out, dude. You know, and it's like I said, the tone is a lot different. This is extremely political, but if you're a Star Wars fan and you have not checked out the Heir to the Empire, or Thrawn trilogy, as they call it, the big drawback is there is no Darth Vader, there is no Emperor. But I got to say, to take those two, at the time, Darth Vader was the single most iconic villain in maybe history. I mean, you wanted to talk about what is a villain, you had Darth Vader's picture. Like, that's a villain. Empire Strikes Back on a ship. Apology accepted, Captain Nita. What else did you need to know about that's the baddest man in the universe?
He was the new Godfather. You are absolutely correct.
Yes. And in this, the Grand Admiral Thrawn is not a replacement for Darth Vader or the Emperor, but it's as good as you're going to get. They did Timothy Zahn's creation of Grand Admiral Thrawn as this genius military strategist is fantastic. You will miss Darth Vader, you will miss the Emperor, but you will deem the Grand Admiral as a worthy successor. Other notable additions, fan favorite characters such as Mara Jade, who becomes Luke Skywalker's wife, is introduced in the Heir to the Empire as a creation of Timothy Zahn.
She was one Talon of the characters who was picked to have a movie of her own.
Yes.
And
she's become a severe fan favorite. Grand Admiral Thrawn, there's a smuggler, gangster, Talon Card, who's become a fan favorite.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of Star Wars mythos that the expanded universe starts here. This was the first one. All right, the true first expanded universe, which is Star Wars' expanded universe by this point, is massive. That was the first. So I have to say, I question Star Wars fan. Oh, yeah, I have a lot of Star Wars stuff. So, you know, like I said, you could do a lot worse if you're a Star Wars fan and reading these comics.
I feel like I need to throw in a disclaimer. Mara Jade has not been approved for a movie, for a film, yet, but she was picked as one of the top 10 characters that fans would like to see a movie of.
And there are a lot of rumors that she is an integral part of the new series, as is Grand Admiral Thrawn, is going to be at some point involved in 789. That's how popular and how ingrained these got into the Star Wars
mythos. A lot of people are saying that if they just film this series, they'll be gold.
I would not agree. Well, first of all, Luke Skywalker, and this is only 5 years after Jedi.
Okay.
So Luke Skywalker is, you know, what... I figure they say 19 years old is the... They never give you the official age, but Luke is like 19 in Star Wars. So you'd figure he would be... In this, he would, I would say, be 30 years old or 30s. Okay. So you'd have to fast forward Luke Skywalker's age or recast him.
Do this a little closer to the end of the
return. I am under the assumption that Mark Hamill is going to be an older Ben Kenobi like Luke Skywalker. And if I've ever rooted for anybody... to be in a movie, it's Mark Hamill to come back and be Luke Skywalker, because if anyone understands his place in geekdom, it's him.
It's Hamill. You are absolutely correct.
I mean, he really gets what he is. And he's been... Correct. And I like... I follow him on Twitter. He doesn't do a lot of tweeting, but I read interviews with him, and I listen to him speak in podcasts, and he's just a joy to listen to, because he has such a high affinity for the things he's done. He knows he's Luke Skywalker, and he loves every second of it. So, hey... I'm all for where the expanded universe started with the Heir to the Empire book. And you can – Dark Horse Comics, 97, 98, I think 99.
It was late 90s, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot in this. There's a lot of teases for episode one. And it's funny because the letter columns, I'll read them. And people are like, this is going to change my life. Episode one's going to be the greatest movie ever. And I'm going, no, it's not, buddy. And you think that's bad? Wait till episode two, because it gets a lot worse.
Anyone ever watch 3?
Alright, so we are moving now to our next section, which is Stuck Stick Pick Sayonara.
And
where
believe...
we talk about... What's up?
Yeah, it'll keep going.
Okay, where we talk about what we've been reading, what we are going to continue reading, and what we are going to stop reading. I'm going to hand the reins over to my friend Phil.
Alright.
Let him start this session off.
Alright, so for my Stucks... I am stuck on Wolverine and the X-Men. They're out of that carnival of whatever the crap that was, where I was starting to lose it a little bit. I thought Jason Aaron kind of lost his steam during that. I'm still not certain about this new story arc where it's taking place in the Savage Land, but we shall see. I am stuck on both of Bendis's X-Men books, All New X-Men and Uncanny X-Men. We're getting both sides of the spectrum here. We're getting the young... X-Men from the past, Scott Summers, Bobby Drake, Jean Grey, Hank McCoy from the past, kind of finding their own place in the world, and finding, it's amazing, it's amazing, there is a frame, and I don't think it was in this issue, I think it was in the previous one, which we would have skipped over because of our lost episode, where Kitty Pryde is talking to Jean Grey on a bed, and it's just swarmed with thoughts.
That's an issue
and
five.
It just sticks in my brain. Uncanny X-Men number one. Number two came out today, actually. Uncanny X-Men number one showed who is potentially going to betray that team on the last page. I know Johnny hasn't read it yet, so I don't want to spoil it for him. But
I'm pretty sure I know who it is.
What's your guess?
Magneto.
Okay. Are you sure?
No.
All right.
I'll be picking it up tomorrow. I still have a gut feeling
that Mystique has something to do with it, but we shall see.
Okay, this is a sexy book I need to pick up.
All right. Also, still stuck on Ultimate Comics Spider-Man? Miles Morales is fighting Venom, man. Like, he's finding himself. He's also still trying to figure out how to get Pete's formula right for the webbing. Well, Genki is, at least. Genki kind of made a... there's not a good way to put it. A slimy white liquid that shot out of his wrist that kind of just splattered on the face of Venom, if that gives you any idea of what I'm referring
to. That's not going to help him much.
I'm also still stuck on Scarlet Spider, which is interesting because it's kind of losing a little bit of the oomph because Kane died at the end of issue 13 again. But he got revived by the end of Portsmouth.
How many times has Kim been revived now?
He's a clone. He can do what he wants.
That's true. All right.
All right. So those are the things that I'm stuck on. I'm good. I'm excited to see them every single month. What I am sticking with is just a smaller stack. Venom. Colin Bunn writes Venom very, very well. Not as well as Remender, though. And it's kind of losing its oomph. They're starting a Toxin storyline with Eddie Brock. It's still taking place in Philadelphia. I'm excited that Eddie Brock's back in it, especially since I'm doing that retro read of Amazing Spider-Man, and I've just really got into the Venom Eddie Brock stuff in that. So it's good to relate to that here. So I'm sticking with Venom. I'm also sticking with Cable and the X-Force. It's finally come full circle. That first issue where we saw a bunch of people laid out, that has been explained. We see what's happening. We see where the team is going. Not perfect, but it's definitely going somewhere. I'm begrudgingly sticking with Deadpool. It's kind of one-trick pony.
I've been following your tweets. It's so hot and cold.
It's been rough. I have another friend who's reading it as well, and he's enjoying it. But I think I expect more out of my comics, especially since I buy so many at this point. The end of issue 5 is going to keep me reading to issue 6, at least. There's a cliffhanger. Issue 6 will be the end of the hunting of the dead or undead presidents, I guess. And once that is over, I'll see what the next arc is going to be. But that's that for Deadpool. Now, I had to split my picks three ways due to losing a podcast. As always, Hawkeye. It's just... consistently,
such a Hawkeye zombie.
It's a consistently solid book. I am so excited that issue 8 is coming. It's in my bag to read tonight.
Mm-hmm. You let me borrow. I think it was the first 6 issues, and you're 100% correct on that. I loved every minute of it.
It's just
every panel.
It's so different than anything else I'm reading. It's humanized. There's so much good in it. And this issue is no exception to the rule. You get both Hawkeyes, you see how both of them handle the big ol' Sandy storm, and what they did during the time frame. Issue 7, also the proceeds went to the Sandy Fund, so it was worth purchase. Johnny and I mentioned this briefly earlier, Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah.
He didn't like the way issue 1 ended, I did. It's still running with the very well now known that Otto Octavius is Peter Parker. Peter Parker is Otto Octavius. And Otto Octavius is being haunted, kind of, by the conscience of Peter Parker.
It just seemed like an out to me.
It's not, though, because it's showing a really interesting way as to why Otto Octavius is still Spider-Man.
Okay.
On top of that, it's also showing Peter Parker his own life through the eyes of Otto Octavius and all the terrible things. One of my big issues is there keeps being, like, kind of uncomfortable moments between Peter, Otto, and Aunt May, because they have a history. But other than that, it's been interesting. Otto is really fun to read through his perspective, because all these years we've seen Otto Octavius as an enemy and a bad guy, and we never really get his perspective. And now we get it. He's also, at the moment, very, very angry at Peter Parker, because he never got his doctorate.
Oy.
That's what we're dealing with now, as well as Green Goblin showing up again.
Okay, I can see how that would be annoying.
No, it's been a great read. Dan Slott knows what he's doing with this story arc, and my understanding is it's going to come to a close soon. My last pick is X-Men Legacy. Simon Spurrier knows what he's doing with David Haller. I guess issue 6, which is also in my bag, has a big cliffhanger. It's the end of the first arc. There's so much good in this book. If you are not reading this, this is my X-Men pick right now. This is above All New and Uncanny, which are phenomenal books. X-Men Legacy is taking the cake. It's so good. It's so unbelievably good. And that arc ends today. My one sayonara was kind of easy to do. As you can see on the cover of Secret Avengers, it's the final issue until they started the new run.
Doesn't that stink that our sayonaras are always final issues?
Yes and no. It makes it easier to break away. It was the end of an arc. It was the end of a series. It was the end of a run. It was Remender's last issue with Secret Avengers. It was done well.
Remender
was
so good. I
felt he was weak toward the end of Secret Avengers. And those are my stuck, stick, pick, and sayonaras of, I guess, the last 2 months for the most part. So I guess it would be time to throw it over to Johnny and see what he's up to. It looks like he has some similar calls.
I got some stucks. I am stuck on Batman. Death of the Family just ended. It is a great story. The Joker was good. We investigated the morality of Batman versus whether he kills the Joker or just lets the Joker keep going. And it was fantastic. I loved his interactions with the Joker. I loved the meltdown that the Joker had with Batman. It was great. Got Wolverine and the X-Men, which we've already discussed. All new X-Men, we've already discussed. Justice League Dark is so much fun. It's just a great book. Jeff Lemire and Ray Fox are doing this. Mikhail Janin is doing the artwork. It's just so cool. We've got Constantine, Zatanna, Deadman, Madame Zandu, Timothy Hunter.
You're so excited about that.
I love Timothy Hunter.
You can tell.
Oh, it's so cool. Now, I'm loving Justice League Dark. If you're not reading it, you should be.
I must have just picked the wrong
New
52.
Yeah,
because you've been all over that since it started.
You did.
New 52 that started?
Peter Mulligan took it up through issue 7 or 8, and then Jeff Lemire took over, and it has been balls to the wall ever since.
Cool.
Awesome.
It's been awesome. Fables is back on track. I love Fables. I've always loved Fables.
Awesome.
We were talking about that.
Oh, such a good book. And it's offshoot Fairest, which is right now exploring Rapunzel. It's so cool. Fairest is a spinoff of Fables exploring the princesses, like a different view on the princesses of fairy tales. And it's really, really not a Disney book.
Fair enough.
It's so cool. And we've got Suicide Squad, which I'm just sticking with because I have a crush on Harley Quinn. And she's awesome.
That was such a sad thing to admit.
Yeah.
I'm reading this comic because I have a crush on Harley Quinn.
Well, we all have a crush on some comic book girl.
I suppose that's the case.
I don't really care. All right. I am sticking with Cable and the X-Horse just because...
Same thing as me.
What?
You want to see where it's going like me?
Oh my god, it's so fun though.
It is.
I mean, Dr. Nemesis? Come on, how cool is he?
I agree.
Thank you. He's so cool. And so Cable and the X-Force, I can definitely recommend. It's an intelligent, well-written comic. I would definitely go with Cable and the X-Force.
I just feel that we've seen that mutation.
We have. We have. But he's doing it in a more scientific, cooler way.
Okay.
That's just my opinion. And Saga I'm sticking with because it's awesome. And that's really all I can say about it without spoiling anything, so... Check out Saga by BKV, Brian K. Vaughan, and Fiona Staples, because it's
good,
fantastic. And Justice League of America, which I was not expecting to like. I loved it. Justice League of America by Jeff Johns with art by David Finch. Oh, sorry. A little bit of a geek out. I love David Finch. This is... Basically, the B-rated heroes that weren't in Justice League formed Justice League of America with the help of Amanda Fuller and Steve Trevor, who have been... Not Amanda Fuller, Amanda Waller. Amanda Waller and Steve Trevor, who have been characters for a while in the New 52. They're basically government liaisons for the Justice League, and when the Justice League went rogue, essentially... They formed the Justice League of America, which consists of Vibe, weird, Katana, weird, Catwoman, WTF moment, Green Arrow, Martian Manhunter, and the new Arabian Green Lantern. Yeah. He was introducing Green Lantern number 0. I was not expecting to like it, but check this out. The art is fantastic, and the storyline... is actually really cool.
It did feel like a gimmick, a state flag on every one of them, but...
That was definitely a gimmick, and Marvel made fun of that with their state bird variants. It was definitely a gimmick.
Fair.
But it was still cute. I got Ohio, because I'm Ohio. They're never going to be worth anything, because there were 51 covers.
Unless you got all 51, they'll be worth $51.
Right, exactly. So, it was just a fun book. There was a lot of espionage, there was a lot of drama, there was a lot of unexpected moments that I was not looking to see.
Okay.
Jeff Johns is back on my radar, and I'm really digging his work. And now for some sayonaras.
New creative team for Green Arrow. Surprising. We'll get it right eventually. That's what the subtitle for Green Arrow. We'll eventually get something right.
I'm saying sayonara to Swamp Thing.
No way!
Scott Snyder is leaving the title.
Oh, has he left already?
So
you're not going to give the next team a chance?
You're just jumping off with him because you're buying too many books?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, I thought maybe it had completely...
just fallen off.
Yeah.
No, still fantastic. Scott Snyder is fantastic.
Now, who was the original? He was the original writer, right?
He is.
Yeah,
well,
he was doing that in Batman.
Alan Moore was the original writer.
No, I'm talking about the new 52.
Yes.
Yeah, Alan Moore.
Scott Snyder, my faith was in him. I loved Rot World. I loved Swamp. The ending of Rot World really left a bad taste in my mouth, to be honest. But, no, this series is... you can't get any better than Scott Snyder's Swamp Thing for the past 18 issues. Has been fantastic.
So you're leaving the party while the party's still going, is what you're saying?
Right.
Okay.
I'm leaving the party before the drunk guy starts mooning people.
I like it. Okay. I thought I was really sad for you for a second because I know that was your pick of the month for like
the first 5 months.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought maybe it had just
gone
the route of Green Arrow.
Scott Snyder has not been tanking.
Sometimes it's good to leave when it's good.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
I checked out Vibe number one, Justice League of America. It was good. It was great. It was Geoff Johns. I'm not going back for issue two. I'm sorry. I'm just... the character... he's cool. He's fun. I'm just... not coming back for issue two. And Katana, number one, I also bought, and I'm not coming back, just because there's nothing in it to really bring me back. I'm sorry. The character's fun, but I'll catch her in Justice League of America. There's really not enough character stance to bring me back for issue two. And Hellblazer, 300... sayonara.
As in, it's over.
It's over. It's ended. That is my dropping off point, is Hellblazer 300. It was a fantastic issue. In fact, if it wasn't the last issue, it would be my pick of the month. It was everything you expected John Constantine to be. Womanizing, drinking, smoking, exercising, haunting. It was
I wouldn't expect exercising. Oh, exorcism. I was thinking of him going out and jogging.
No.
I wouldn't expect that at all.
He does do a bit of jogging,
Johnny.
But it's not of his own accord.
Shoot.
Yeah. No, it's great. He's smoking a cigarette, and he is half the issue. He is a disembodied ghost.
I'd like to pretend that I'm playing that joke. I really didn't.
I know.
That was really me thinking, really?
No,
he's
was
on
cute.
A treadmill.
That was good. So, no, I dug it.
All right.
I dug it. It was a great issue. But, sadly, Hellblazer
it
is
happens.
Over. My pick of the month has to be the Fables original graphic novels, Werewolves of the Heartland. Bill Willingham has been teasing this for a while. This follows the adventures of Big Bad Wolf. It's a cruel gag. And his search for another land for... the Fables to stay at, because in the storyline of the Fables, they got discovered by an ancient evil and were run out of their safe town. This is Big B hitting the pavement and looking for a new location. It's so cool. The story is honestly not up to par. The story is honestly not up to par with the rest of the Fables storylines. But it's just a lot of fun. If you're a Fables fan, check this book out. It's really cool. And that's what I got. Now we're on to Darren.
All right. G.I. Joe Origins. I've been doing that digitally. I'm not that big of a G.I. Joe fan, but there's some pretty good stuff in here. And I've heard a lot about, I think it's called G.I. Joe Cobra, which I inadvertently bought, not knowing that G.I. Joe Origins leads into it. And I've read so many reviews that say it's one of the greatest comic noir offerings in a very long time. So I'm going to check that out, but I think I kind of want to go through G.I. Joe Origins. I'm probably halfway there, and there's only 27 issues. So I think it's worth a run. And Star Trek Ongoing, it's the ongoing of the new cast. it's essentially just retelling of original series episodes with a new cast. I understand why they're doing it. It's a fresh way to dip in new waters. But they do have Countdown to Darkness coming out. Hmm. One of the things that got me really pumped up for the last Star Trek movie, and one of the things that kind of revived my interest in Star Trek, was they did a countdown of Star Trek, 4 issues leading up. It was the, I can't remember the name of the villain from the first movie that was played by the guy who played the Hulk. I can't remember his name either. But
why
they
can't
did.
We remember this. It was awesome.
They did the origin story for him, and it crossed over into the original series, and it crossed over into the Next Generation, where you find that Data was the captain of the Enterprise. I'm like, that thing hooked me real quickly. Nice. So I'm gonna. I don't know about that one. Actually, I meant to say that's my sayonara, Star Trek ongoing. You're gone. Shadow number 8. Sticking with the Shadow number 8. It's been uneven at best. I really don't know what's going on with this thing. They started doing like a serialized storytelling, which was about him traveling into Japan and trying to stop a production of some a weapon of mass destruction. And then they ended that, and now they're like hopping in and out of certain one-off stories. Shadow number 8 was good, though. It basically told about a story about one of the Shadows. Lamont Cranston is the alter ego of the Shadow, and it told about one of his old war buddies that had kind of gone into this cult. And he brought the Shadow in. And those are the kind of the fun stories to tell where, oh, we're going to bring you in thinking you're a sucker. It'd be like bringing Bruce Wayne in. We're going to go bring you in and take your money. It kind of reminds me a little bit of a story that they did with I think it was Justice League Rock of Ages, where Luthor tried to overtake the Justice League corporate, not realizing, of course, that Bruce Wayne is part of the Justice League. He's like, well, there's not anyone here who can match me on finances. And Batman, Bruce Wayne, is standing right there. And Lex Luthor has no idea that that's what they... He's like, yeah, well, that guy could.
Oh, well, that's a discussion for them.
That was Grant Morrison in Rock of Ages.
Of course.
Masks, which is the team-up book for The Spider, The Shadow. Zorro is on the cover once again and yet still is not Zorro. In the book. So we're waiting for him to show up. It's okay. It's set in the 30s, so it's a nice little period piece right off of the Shadow, which is kind of cool. And it's dealing with a city. It's a fictional city, that's under martial law, that a new governor's come into place and he's instituted martial law and they're busting people up. They're dealing with racism. It's interesting to see these heroes as opposed to like Superman or Spider-Man or someone like that. The Green Hornet, Kato also. It's a little uneven though. I'm sticking with it though because it's only around for a couple more issues. Masters in the Universe, finally He-Man shows up. They spent a couple of issues, it seemed like he was looking for, like something happened to He-Man along the way, some sort of spell. He shows up. Actually, Jen, I believe it was you that told me that it's going to be an ongoing series now, and I'm going to stick with it because I'm a He-Man fan, and I've always loved He-Man. I'm enjoying it. It's cool to, because he seems to be the guy that was very popular that can't seem to get a foothold in this boom of nostalgia we've experienced over the last 10 years. They did a cartoon series, which was not very well received. There was a comic book series that went along with it and a toy line that was introduced about 10 years ago that was a little bit off. They've reintroduced a new toy line.
You can't reintroduce He-Man.
Well, you can. And I just have you and I have talked where I have my own story. Like, I would love, like, that's actually my dream. If I was given a chance to write a comic, I want to write He-Man because I've got a story in my head. I'm not going to say anything about that because I don't want anyone to steal it. I'm a bit behind on this one, but Star Wars number 1, classic characters, all new Star Wars.
I have heard great things about that series.
We're off to a really good start here. Brian Wood and Carlos Donata, the artwork is really good. It's interesting because it takes place after A New Hope, almost immediately after A New Hope, and they are now searching for the new base. Luke has not discovered almost any of his Jedi powers. He's not sure of... It's a really interesting to fill in the gaps. And I got to tell you, it couldn't come at a better time for Star Wars fans who are kind of fiending a lot of Star Wars after the... I think what probably had occurred, what may be occurring with me, a lot of the bitterness over the prequel trilogy has now subsided.
You'll never really subside Jar Jar Binks.
Well, Jar Jar Binks, I'm of the mind that Jar Jar Binks was the least of the problems with the Star Wars prequel trilogy. And my pick of the month is Finding Gossamer.
Again?
This is just It's a really great book. The artwork is peerless in here. It is something I've shown you guys before. I'll show you again. It's just something very different, something unique. But at the same time, this almost feels like Finding Gossamer to me feels like what we wanted our Saturday morning cartoons to be. Or more to the point, it feels as though David Rodriguez and Sarah Ellerton are the creative team. It feels as though, as we look back to some of our favorite Saturday morning cartoons, like maybe like Dungeons and Dragons or Thundar the Barbarian, this is what we have in our minds that they were. But then we go back and look at them, and then they're not, obviously, and it kind of Thundercats, which to me, I can't even watch. It's so bad.
Oh, it's bad.
It's crappy.
Masters of the Universe, by the way, holds up just enough. You're like, okay, this does not kill my love for this. So that is my my pick of the week is Finding Gossamer. It's something you're a little bit outside of the box for comic books. Maybe not so much out of the box, but it's not your traditional sort of comic booky.
I'm digging the art a lot. Yeah, and you're absolutely right. It is very Saturday morning-ish.
It's very Saturday morning. Like I said, I really feel like when you sit back and you think about how great some of those Saturday morning cartoons, this is what you think it was. And I think that's kind of what they're going for here. So I'm very much enjoying that. But that's going to about do it for today. We got a real special episode coming up next month. And that is going to be our top artists in comic book history. I know you wanted to plug something, right? You wanted to plug something.
I did. I have a new story coming out in a couple weeks. It's called Cupid. What's Love Got to Do With It? It's set in the Mythos universe. If you've read my Mythos books, The Time After Oblivion is available right now for download on Amazon.com. Cupid, one of the reasons I started working in the Mythos universe was to reintroduce the Greco-Roman gods into the 21st century, and this image of Cupid staring at a Hallmark store on Valentine's Day at the Cupid in my story is a womanizing, cigar-smoking, well-dressed guy.
I love it.
Yeah, and he's staring at this Hallmark store covered in images of himself thinking, what the hell?
Sounds cool.
And that's where the story started, and that's where the story goes. And that's my plug. All right. This is Panoscanners. And we are awesome.